hello and welcome to Card Knock Life, episode 8, where bad beats are $1, but the podcast is free, and freedom costs $1.05, and deer nuts are under a buck. I'm your host, Corey Murphy, and I'm here with your host, Daryl Feltner.
What up?
And John Galley.
Blue cards suck.
Shuming Chen. And we got a special guest this week, Ryan Utke.
How's it going this evening, guys?
Ryan, I'm gonna let you kick things off and just kind of introduce yourself and tell everybody what you're all about and what you're here to talk about.
My name is obviously Ryan, and tonight especially I want to talk about draft. Currently, this is one of my favorite draft formats, draft limited in general is my favorite format to play. As well as I do play a lot of standard, and I also enjoy modern as well. Not so much Legacy anymore. Just got a little too expensive, but I am a big fan of the draft, especially this format. So,
cool. Yeah, and by the way, I forgot to add that Ryan is broadcasting from the International Space Station, which is why it sounds like that. And you can hear the aliens in the background, too.
How did you know I was going to ask if you asked him about the International Space Station?
I didn't. Just figured it was something that you guys were all wondering about since it sounded so like interstellar like connection here.
Yeah, it's pretty cool up here at the space station. It makes magic playing difficult, but we make it work.
I heard that the PPTQ at the International Space Station had 2 in attendance, so good chance to top 8 there.
Yeah, and actually the other person got DQ'd for a deckless error, so.
So man, you got all that always, time.
You're always dropping out on Cockatrice over there, right?
Yeah.
Anyways, you guys ready to get started?
Let's do it.
Let's go.
All right, Daryl, take it away.
Insert a bumper here.
Yep, insert the bumper here.
So I got a couple things, not a lot of deck lists or like super heavy constructed content as far as looking at, you know, let's break down the deck list. Let's go card by card and see what we can change, what makes sense, what doesn't. This is a lot more of sort of a thought process and a theory sort of thing, a preparation thing. I know that I'm going to play the SCG Invitational in New Jersey in August, I believe it is. So I don't really know how to prepare for these multi-format events. And I don't know if you guys have, because like it's going to be standard and legacy. Legacy I feel pretty confident about, but I'm still working on my deck. Standard I know literally nothing about. Like I know there's a dragon deck and another dragon deck and a really bad blue dragon deck. That's all I really know. Like I don't know what's good, what's bad. I know that Siege Rhino's a card, but like, how does one, am I supposed to prepare for this event? Am I supposed to just be like, okay, make sure I 8-0 the legacy portion and then like some guy hand me a deck and hopefully I can like 6-2 or 5-2-1 or 4-2-2 the standard portion and like get to the top 8 and where it's legacy and I can try and like leverage that skill to like to victory? Or am I supposed to like prepare equally for both of these formats? I don't actually know. I've never done this before, so if either you guys have prepared for a multi-format tournament or have some sort of background on this or anything like that, feel free to kind of share with me here because I'm kind of trying to figure out how to do this and feel the waters out for it.
Yeah, but, Daryl, I don't think you're alone in that because I've actually had several of the Legacy guys approach me this week about the Invitational, talking about how they're fearing the standard section because they don't play very often. But I think this is testament to like our local crew and anybody who's listening who, you know, may have a good play group in your area. I mean, I think that's the best thing you can do is you pull cards and practice. So, you know, leading up to the Invitational, the format will obviously be a lot different. But, well, now that I'm saying this, you're going to be in Baltimore. But, you know, getting plenty of online testing and that sort of thing.
Yeah, man,
we'll clue you in what's hot.
Got to work the legs too, right?
Daryl?
Darryl. Yeah, something like that. I didn't know if there was an extension to that comment or if it was just like, period.
No, I forgot to say question mark. Hey, Daryl, you know what? This is like, so obviously, like if standard is the format that you're weakest with, then you just got to play it. And standard, like the thing I like about standard personally, and this has nothing to do with the complexity or simplicity of any kind of format, but the fact that there are, you know, the card pool is so much more limited than in Legacy. And so, like, there is a finite number of, like, counterspell options or a finite number of, like, efficient removal options. So getting used to, like, what things, you know, like, are played and what things to expect. Even then, the brews and the odd, like, decks that show up, you know, are still somewhat somewhat understandable and predictable. And in that way, it's more like chess than I think Legacy is, where it's kind of more of a free for all and sort of you a lot of rock paper scissors in like some matchups are very combo-y and like just, you know, maybe are hard for you to understand and hard for you to interact with in your particular deck that you choose.
Yeah, and that's definitely something why like I kind of brought this up is I'm not saying like one format's more simplistic or one format has more options or one format's this or one format's that. It's like these are two formats that I have to play to win a tournament that I'm going to go to. And good preparation is to be ready for both of them. Well, I feel very comfortable knowing sort of how to attack all the off-the-wall Legacy decks kind of as you've seen them once before, you read about them on the internet or something like that. I don't even feel comfortable trying to figure out where to start tackling the standard format. And, like, I'm talking about, like, what deck should I be playing if I expect a Tarkir Red and Esper Dragons to be big? What deck should I be playing if I expect these two decks to be big? Like, I don't even know how to start there.
So I think the good thing about standard, Daryl, in this respect for your preparation is there's two things about it. There's one, it's been a very open format for the most part in the last year or two. And I expect even with the changes coming forward that it will be that way. So you'll have a selection of decks and likely there will be one good one out of a group that you'll be comfortable with. Not necessarily like the best deck, you know, for everyone, but just a deck that you'll be comfortable with and play well. And then also, like a lot of us, like and a lot of guys, even probably in Baltimore, I'm sure that play standard a lot, you know, will play with a variety of the decks and they'll know the two or three that kind of have pretty consistent results. And especially since the format is so cyclical, like you'll one deck will be the hot deck of the week or the hot deck of the next 3 weeks. You'll be able to really target that going forward. So you'll know kind of the invitational deck that's supposed to be popular and either you'll play that or you play something to beat it.
Okay.
Yeah, so unlike Legacy where, you know, you have your established decks and and there'll be little tweaks for the meta, but there'll be the established decks that you know you have to have some game against. In Standard, you can pretty much target, you know, 3 to 5 decks that you really have to address. And that's pretty much all that you have to attack. Like right now, if you ask somebody in Standard for this week coming forward, what is really, really good, I'd give you 3 decks right there. Abzan, Megamorph, Esper Dragons and Atarka Red are still the 3 real top decks that you either play or have to be able to beat. And it also it helps with sideboard and metagame cards, I think, too. I don't know. Ryan, you play a lot of Standard, man. Would you agree or what do you think about it?
Yeah, I definitely agree. Those are the 3 decks right now. And the one thing with Standard, and you kind of hit on it, is I try to play a different deck every week. So not only am I prepared and know whatever deck I decide to play, I feel comfortable with, but at the same time, I'm comfortable playing against anything out there. But those 3, I mean, you're going to go into a tournament, you're going to see Dragons, you're going to see the Den Protector and Deathmist Raptor package, and you're going to see a Tarkir Red. And so you need to go in and prepare to play those 3 decks, whether it's one of those 3 decks or you come up with a brew that can consistently beat those 3 decks. But for you, Daryl, I would spend the majority, if I was going to the Invitational, I would spend the majority of my time on Legacy because I'm not as familiar with that. But for you, I'd probably spend more time preparing for the Standard portion and then take time preparing for what you think the specific meta is going to be in the Legacy portion for that tournament.
Okay, and that's really reasonable advice. I was just kind of like trying to feel out, you know, should I invest more heavily in trying to make sure I hit a Legacy? Because like, I know I can play a Legacy tournament in such a way that I can win 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 games. I've done it before. Or am I trying to, like, split my preparation and make sure I'm, like, you know, a 75% match win player in both formats? Is what I was trying to figure out. Like, what is the best way to spend that?
I think what you want to do right now is, since the Invitational is still pretty far off and there's some sets coming up in between, I think that you want to just play Legacy and practice that because the standard knowledge won't be as important because it's going to be always like 2 or 3 weeks out is when you really need to know what's going on.
Sure.
So, you know, I would say when does Origins come out? Do any of you guys know?
It's in June, I think.
Yeah. So that'll be obviously the biggest impact on standard.
July. Yeah. First week of July, I think.
So if it's first week of July, Daryl, and the Invitational's in August, I'd say about mid-July is probably when, you know, after there's been maybe like 2 SCG, hopefully 3 SCG or GP tournaments under Standard's belt by then, is when you'll have a pretty good indicator of what's those three or four decks that you need to be aware of. And then at that point, you just basically, I would go either online or in person and jam a ton of games with all three or four of those decks and figure out which one you feels best, or talk to, you know, friends and see what seems best. I've got like 10 decks in my bag from stuff I've played, and then I play a bunch of stuff online, and like all the decks looked like decent on paper when I first saw them. But it was really clear after like a week of testing that there was only two or three decks that really mattered of that group.
Right, right.
Sure.
And hey, you can see where a lot of people like misbuilt stuff and where you think somebody probably just ran hot in a given tournament.
To clarify, Origins is release date July 17th. So
I think it'll be a huge impact too, because I'm pretty sure we were talking about this, Corey, before the cast.
Yeah, I was about to ask, how does that
I think Origins and M15 are going to be legal together like it's been in the past with core sets. There's a lapse time where you get both core sets until the full rotation of Theros Block and the M15.
So we're looking at M15, Theros.
Yeah, you're going to have a big standard when you go to the Invitational, right?
Standard's going to be the biggest until Back to Zendikar comes out.
It's October for that one, so it's a long time that we've got the card pool that we have now. It's going to be pretty well solidified by that point, I think, really.
I think Origins is going to have a big impact, too, because core sets typically, I feel, have a really big impact on Standard. People kind of slight them because the cards kind of suck sometimes, and you got a lot of like Grizzly Bear-type cards. But if you look at core sets, there's always like 5 to 10 rares or so that are super impactful on the set or uncommons. I mean, look at Stoke the Flames and Goblin Rabble Master. And then,
In core sets past, you've had
Mutavault, Squadron Hawk.
Was a common, and it was just, it defined the format after people figured out that, you know, drawing 3-1 was not bad.
Yeah. And Origins is like the, you know, obviously the last core set. It's like the kind of, what is it, the 20-year reunion type thing or something? Or they're basically just trying to make this big deal out of it. So.
Yeah.
I think it'll be big. I don't know. I haven't seen any spoilers. Have you guys?
No, no spoilers yet.
Yeah, just the Liliana.
Yeah, just the Lily.
Wait, what Liliana?
You've seen that, haven't you?
Oh, the new Liliana. Yeah, yeah. What does it do again? Oh, it flips. That's right. Oh, man.
It's flip like cards a flip walker.
Yeah, it flips into a planeswalker.
Flip cards.
I mean,
anybody who...
It's cool. Like, they did it in a way that makes a lot of sense and doesn't, like, make it rules, like a rules headache.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's fine.
I mean, I liked the flip cards mechanics wise, but they were just kind of a hassle to play with because they added another element to tournaments where you could get in trouble. And then also, like, if anybody buys like light colored sleeves, you just have to be very aware of that. I had to throw out a ton of sleeves that I had when the flip cards first came out because you could kind of see through the back.
Yeah. Ah, can't play those reckless waves, John.
Exactly.
Just go back to the old Kamigawa right side up, upside down flip cards. Dude,
because those weren't confusing.
Yeah,
those were not all confusing. Oh, God. You're dead to me, Corey.
Hey, on this topic, before we go, I know I don't want to beat a dead horse or anything, but sure. But talking Standard and just talking playing Constructed in general, I think more important than anything, like, you just got to pick a deck that you like. And so if control is your thing, like even I would say even more important than the metagame, pick the deck style that you're comfortable with. And figure out what the bad matchups are and understand those bad matchups. And you can make adjustments. You know, there's sideboard options and things.
Right.
But I found that I've got, like, I like to play tier 1.5 and tier 2 decks in Standard. And I've had quite a bit of success doing it. And the best way to do it is to find the bad matchups and then, you know, use Cockatrice or MTGO or something and play the decks that beat you down and figure out what their weakness is as the pilot. And so, like, I'm getting my butt kicked by a Tarkir Red when I play Sultai Reanimator. And I'm trying to figure out like what I can do in my Sultai Reanimator deck that makes Tarkir Red cry. And Tarkir Red, I found that the best way to beat it is to cut it really good and make it draw really bad. And so I'm not gonna I don't have any control over that.
I think there is something you can do, just as a side note. I'm not a standard wizard. But have you considered playing some number of main deck Minister of Pain?
Main deck?
The card's really sweet, but I don't know. I don't know if it would be a main deck card, but either 75 or whatnot, it's pretty.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah. Like I think like even just one Minister of Pain to like you can gum the board up with like your wall thing and the guy that mills you, and then like eventually find that guy and you're whipping back or play him.
Like, yeah, you can sack like a wayfinder to him and stuff too, so it's not bad. But I think Corey, your point is really good one that like, yeah, even if you're playing like a tier 1.5 deck, sometimes that in this format in particular at least is not that bad. Like your deck at that PPTQ we were all at, like, was a pretty good choice that day. Like those decks did well, and like you gave a hard time to a lot of players. So, you know, and if you lose to a Tarka Red with Sultai Whip, I mean, you're probably losing to their better hands anyways, which are pretty good against like the entire field. So I don't think it's like a bad thing if you lose a couple games here and there to it. Okay. Those are things that you should be able to strengthen up with cards, like you're saying. You find cards that are a little more effective and increase your percentages. And that's really what standard is right now, I feel like. You know, it's you want to try to get a matchup to 60-40 or to 55-45 as opposed to it being more of a coin flip.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, and I definitely do the tend to gravitate towards what you're good at thing. But I wasn't sure if, you know, even if I'm not good at playing aggro, is it just like right to blindly go off the map and just play 100 games of the Tarka Red and just play it, even though I'm not good at it.
No.
Because I can cruise to like a 4-4 or a 5-3 and try and aid a legacy, or is it just like, no, put in a legitimate amount of practice and find a deck that works for me?
When it gets down to that late point in July, I think, you know, like I said, play like a couple of the decks and see which one feels good to you, because at that point, like, you really want to find if the format is going to be as open as it is right now, or if it's going to be like the season from a year ago where Mono Black was clearly the best deck and Mono Blue is also one of the best decks. Like, in that format, as much as I hated those decks so much, like, it made the right sense to play one of those decks because you just had such a more significant advantage over the other decks.
Sure.
So if the format shakes out like that where there seems to be, like, a really clearly defined winner, then yeah. But, like, in this format, I mean, the top three decks are all three different archetypes, so.
Okay, sure. And that was all I really had on that. It was just, like, what do you guys think is the best way to attack these multi-format tournaments? Because I don't even know. I've never done it before. So I wanted to kind of get some input on, you know, what's the best way for you guys to do you think. And I think we kind of arrived at a similar point, which is, you know, make sure that you can 6-2 both formats. And spend some time cleaning up, you know, the area that you feel weaker in, which in my case is standard, in most people's cases, legacy. But, you know, trying to 8-0-4-4 makes it a lot tougher on you than, you know, 6-2-6-2.
The biggest thing I wouldn't do is play a, like, a real solid tier 2 deck or, like, a brew that's looks spicy. I think that's the worst thing you can do in standard right now. Because okay. There's a lot of decks out there that look really cool but don't have any legs to them at all.
Okay.
So that's what I would avoid as much. Like Legacy, you have the open card pool, and you may have been working on something for quite a long time. But Standard, like the shelf life is so short, you really got to know like what are the three or four good decks.
Okay, that's fair. I do have something else, and I think it'll segue perfectly into Corey here. I was just kind of looking at Modern Masters 2 today. Format, the set. I don't really know what my beef is. It just feels like the set has no identity. Like, you have all these Eldrazi, and then, like, the green section has, you forced Nest Invader and Dread Drone and Kozilek Predator into this set. So that's, like, your ramp section, but there's no, like, Kodama's Reach or Explosive Vegetation, and there's not a lot of Mana Rocks. You put all these Bounce Lands in the set with Primeval Titan, but no Amulet, so there's no Amulet combo deck. You know, you missed out on chances to reprint things like Ancient Stirrings and Cataxian Probe. They're actually pretty good for, and Serum Visions. They're actually pretty good for limited formats. You know, a little bit of draw fixing, a little bit of, you know, like finding your bomb rares and, you know, things like that aren't bad for formats. And so I think they missed out on the opportunity printing, like even printing, I know you're going to get this new Goblin Guide, you know, putting just a good, strong one mana guy on the bottom of the curve to let the red deck go, you know, 1-2-3, attack, attack, attack. And be able to, like, put pressure on your opponents. It just feels like there's a lot missing from this format that I kind of wish was there. And it doesn't feel like it has an identity. Like, we have cards like Daybreak Coronet just hanging out. All those Eldrazi, the format looks too fast to even cast. So it doesn't know if it wants to be a draft set or a money grab set. Or it doesn't really feel like it has an identity. And I don't know if you guys kind of looked at it and thought of it the same way I did or not. But that's sort of, I don't want to open this set because the draft format looks kind of miserable. because you just have these like random cards that you have to pick. Like, you're not gonna pass an Iota, but you're never gonna cast an Iota unless like you have every removal spell in the draft. You don't want to pass Leyline of Sanctity. But when do you ever want that in your pool in a sealed deck pool, other than for the $30 it's worth? You're Daybreak never gonna cast Coronet. Daybreak Coronet. I'll kind of let you take over, but like, there just seem to be cards that are very out of place for
them. Didn't Modern Masters 1 had a little bit of that too, though? I agree with you. It looks very strange to me, and this is a good discussion to get into. But didn't Modern Masters 1 also have a good amount of dead cards that were just there for like basically modern reprints?
There were like draft themes, you know? And this one's got two draft themes that are pretty lame. It's like Eldrazi versus like Kamigawa Spirits. That's what it looks like to me. It was a bad fight anyway.
That does seem to be like the biggest difference I notice, is that there's not really that many themes. I mean, there are themes there, but they're not as defined as they were in the original. For me, that was always a really tough thing with Modern Masters 1. I didn't draft it a ton, but the times that I drafted, I was very confused because there were such hard lines to get into these decks.
Yeah.
And it seemed like if people like cut into your archetype, or you just, you know, like if you made the wrong choice, even in the slightest, you could have a terrible draft deck. And I kind of wonder if this strategy of having less clearly defined lines is going to open up like just strong drafting techniques rather than draft red-white giants, you know?
So there are less clearly defined lines, but when I look at the sets, I see like, you know, you can put together a decent red-blue storm deck or just a red-blue deck in Modern Masters 1. Because you had cards like Electrolyze, you can splash your Lightning Helix. You could, you know, play an Engineered Explosives. There was like a sweet deck where you could draft Oryx Salvagers and the Trinkets. Like, so like there's sweet decks you could do, but then those cards also filled holes in other draft decks. Whereas like, you look at a deck like Eldrazi Ramp, so you get the Eldrazi Temple and the Emrakul and an Ulamog's Crusher and an Eye of Ugin. And what's the rest of your deck? Like, did you get the Karn too? Good job, you got the Karn.
But Eldrazi like, spawns.
Yeah, so like you have to hit the Eldrazi spawn theme. But like, those cards just don't fit in any other format archetypes though. Yeah. Whereas like the Electrolyze fits in like the Blue Storm deck, the Blue Red Control deck, the Five Color Sunburst deck. Like it fit, like the cards fit into like more archetypes and more like you can draft like a reasonable just like two color decks and not have to be hardcore on these themes. So it felt like to me Modern Masters 1 was like a much more draftable format and a much more sealed pool playable format. Whereas like this one is just got like big giant monsters, but they missed out on printing Tron so that you could power those guys out. You know, stuff like that. So
Daryl, case in point, here's a good one. Daybreak Coronet. Two white in the cost, right? Enchant creature.
White, yep.
Enchant creature with another aura attached to it. Enchanted creature gets +3/+3 and has first strike, vigilance, and lifelink. Obviously a card in Boggles, right? A $30 card.
Hold on, Daryl. Card is actually really good, like in limited. When there's like an archetype for auras, that card's really powerful.
There's not, which is the problem.
This is my point. Yeah. There is not one other aura in white that you can attach to a creature. Now, if you have an arrest on your guy, you might be able to cast a Daybreak Coronet and put on your creature. But if this is drafted, you know, and you're like, and you've never played the set, you've never even looked at the spoiler before, and you weren't aware that there aren't any other auras, you would probably assume that there were, right, by seeing a Daybreak Coronet. Like, oh, that's a rare in the set. Like, I think that's a strategy.
If
you're playing a Modern Masters draft and you're paying like $30 for it, you better know what's in the set.
So, but like, to be fair, if I'm playing a Modern Masters draft and I'm like trying to get into Modern, so I know there are like sweet Modern cards here, and I open a Daybreak Coronet, and so I go, it's not about the money, it's about winning the draft. If I didn't know the entire contents of the set and I saw a Daybreak Coronet, I go, this card is insane. Like, my guy has Vigilance and Lifelink, and I think, does it fly or have Trample?
I don't know. I flipped away here.
Okay, sweet. Yeah, it's like, I know it has Vigilance and Lifelink.
Vigilance, Lifelink, First Strike.
First Strike, okay, yeah. Which is just an unbeatable combat ability in when you have, like, a six-power guy. So I'm like, all right, sweet. So I put an aura on my guy. It's like a 4-4, and then I put this on it. It's like a 7-7 unkillable, unless they have a removal spell. Perfect. Take this. And then you just never see another aura. It doesn't make sense. Now, you drafted a $30 card on accident, but it doesn't, there's no cohesion to that card.
That said, though, Chase card, like you said, expensive, and you only need one other aura to make that card insane and limited. So there's not a lot of auras, but if you can get just one other aura, like, and maybe something to help dig through your deck, like, still could be playable card. But it is disappointing, obviously, that there's not more.
Yeah. Well, it seems to me that they spent much more time with Modern Masters 1 making it a fun draft format, and that was the most important part, is making it so there's lots of different decks. But kind of like Daryl said, even if you go into an archetype, there's filler cards for filling out the rest of your deck and not just that archetype. And this set, it just seems like they went to Star City, pulled up all the modern cards that were more than $20, and put them in the set.
I see. Yeah. The thing with that and the real identity crisis, though, is that there's this element of that where they printed these cards that you don't want to use in draft, but then they screwed everybody with this set and didn't print, like, the big money cards like Goblin Guide and Serum Visions and the ones that – and Corey, I'm not trying to dive too much into your segment here.
Yeah, let's
but
kick
they
it over
missed
to Corey.
A lot of cards.
Let's kick it over to Corey and let him take care of
go for
it. He's got the beef. Insert buffer here.
All right, before I even start that conversation, I'm like looking further into the Daybreak Coronet situation. There are literally two offensive auras in the set. Offensive meaning the other auras are like, you know, the ones that give debilitating injury type of stuff. So two, yeah, and they're both red. One of them is Splinter Twin.
Yeah,
so, like, you literally cannot play this card. You cannot rely on getting, you know, your four of, what is the card called even? It's, like, useless. It's two for...
Dude, you just gotta be a sick bastard and get 2 Daybreak Coronets.
Oh, my God, I can't believe it.
You can't play the first...
Oh, wait, you can't play it. Oh, my God.
You have to have the Goblin War Paint to make it
So, like, here's the fun part, though, is that, like, you'll also run into, like, rules questions around Daybreak Coronet. Like, they say they arrest your guy and you can't attack with it. You're like, sweet, I'll hook it up with this Daybreak Coronet and then kill their arrest and kill them with it. Well, you just killed your Daybreak Coronet too. So it's just like absolutely horrible. Doesn't, like, it's a rules thing that if you play it against Boggles, you'll know it, but it's horrifyingly bad. And
why does it fall off?
So it's only, the creature's only a legal target if they have another aura on them. So, like,
it says enchant creature with another aura on it, though.
Correct. It doesn't... It's still not elite. I'm pretty sure if you look at Daybreak Coronet's text, if they don't have another aura on them, the Daybreak Coronet falls off.
It's like when you animate dead on a chroma, and the protection from black knocks the animate dead off.
Yeah, same thing.
Like, I don't know about that. I don't see anything in this text that looks like that.
I'm pretty sure that's how it works, because I've had that explained to me before.
Daryl, can you research?
I can't because I have a 165-piece jigsaw puzzle.
Oh, I always get killed by Boggles before Daybreak Coronet comes down anyways. So
I mean, yes, the Boggles has, like, infinity ways to give their guy lifelink. So you're like, the red decks will be dead to it, but, like, let me see if I can find my phone and look this up.
I lost my top eight winning into Boggles. I'm still very bitter about that.
A little salty, yeah.
Yes. All right, continue, Ryan.
On the rulings,
rulings on Daybreak Coronet. If all other auras attached to enchanted creatures stop enchanting it, Daybreak Coronet will be attached to an illegal permanent and will be put into the owner's graveyard.
Boom!
Is that, like, straight out of the Gather or what?
Yep, it's right on my Judge app.
Game, boys. You're welcome.
Gotta love Magic cards that don't have everything printed on them.
Yeah, it's not a legal target for the Daybreak Coronet, so it falls off. It's like protection from red, dropping red auras on things and stuff like that.
Sure, sure.
The chromo situation.
Ryan, what do you think about this format?
I was so excited for it because Modern Masters 1 was so
the bomb.
Especially drafting it. I remember that first weekend I drafted 7 times and I could have done another 10. And after seeing the final spoilers, I'm pretty disappointed. I just think that kind of what Daryl said, there's just too many cards that don't make sense in a cohesive draftable format. Now, I could be wrong. It could kind of be like you said, that there's fewer archetypes to go into, and therefore the draft format could be more open. But I think you're going to find yourself, like, looking at your cards you've drafted, you're going to find 13 playables, and you're going to have to stick another 10 in the deck. So,
don't you feel for the guy that, like, opens, like, a really good playable, like, a Vendilion Click, and then, like, a foil Leyline of Sanctity? So, and for those of you that don't know, Leyline Sanctity is almost $40. But now you click 50. So a foil Leyline Sanctity probably going to be somewhere in the range of $80. Are you, like, do you take the click to win the draft, or do you take the Leyline Sanctity because it's $80? Like, that foil is just, like, non-cohesive, and it makes no sense in any draft deck ever, but, like, it's there.
Yeah, you take the Vendilion click because it's way more badass.
That's a worry in this format in and of itself, obviously, the value versus the power. But we had that in MM1 a little bit, too. I think the bigger worry here is that if there's not these defined archetypes and it is more open and we see the pile of crap that I'm looking at in the spoiler here, there's going to be pulls where you get the insanity, like the superpower rares, and those pulls are just going to be like so much better than the other pulls. I mean, we've seen swingy limited formats, but like I can't imagine having this like dump of commons and uncommons I'm seeing versus somebody who has like the double Kiki Jiki pool or the Karn Elish Norn pool, you know, like something bananas. Yeah.
So, but here's my thing: when you say that in Modern Masters, when we get the chase problem, the problem with your statement is the chase cards were still good in draft. Vendilion Click, still a good draft card.
Sure.
Tarmogoyf, after when the game goes long, Tarmogoyf's great. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna kick it over to Corey because I know Corey has a lot to say about this.
All right, yeah, well, here, thus begins my PSA. So I'm going to start with this thing that's related to the link called Most Played in MM 2015. And basically, this is a list that someone created with the top 50 most played modern cards and whether or not they're reprinted in Modern Masters. So obviously, the first one, Lightning Bolt, right? And obviously is reprinted in Modern Masters as an uncommon. So great. Thank you, Wizards. You didn't screw that one up. But number two.
That card's 250. That card is not cheap.
No, it's not cheap, right? So there you go. There's some value in the uncommons in this set. Number two is Serum Visions with a big old red X next to it. And we talked about this a little bit last week as, you know, this card's $8 right now. It's going to go up, right?
It's going to go up even further from there. So, like, people will just keep playing it, so it will just go up. Until they print a cantrip that's better than Serum Visions, and then they'll just ban it, and Serum Visions will be back on top. So,
yeah. Right. So I don't want to go too far into this yet, but we'll come back to Serum Visions, because it's a point of frustration for a lot of people.
You have a special place in your heart for it.
Yes. Number three, Snapcaster Mage. Not eligible. Still in print. Why might that be?
So Modern Masters, the Modern Masters concept there is that like they only do it for sets up to a certain point. So like the cutoff here was Alara, and then they kept like chase rares, but like they only do it for sets that are out of print.
Okay, so
Innistrad's not completely out of print. It's gonna be soon, but it's like right on the cusp. Yeah. So like Snapcaster Mage is not eligible. Path to Exile is not eligible because they reprinted it. Thoughtseize is in a standard format. It was reprinted.
Yeah.
Same thing with Thoughtscatter. So, like, as you go down the list, if you have a question, I'll kind of, like, chime in.
Okay. All right. Well, number four is Path. That's in an event deck, obviously.
Got reprinted.
Number five, Remand, is in Modern Masters. Number six, Spellskite, is in Modern Masters. Seven is Thoughtseize. That's in Theros. Can't be reprinted right now. Gitaxian Probe is number eight. So there's the other cantrip. Now, they have Phyrexian Man on the set. So if the argument was that they didn't want to go into that mechanic, they did. You know,
they botched it. They gave us Gutshot. They gave us Apostle
Spellskite, right.
Spellskite, like every single one of the playable Modern.
Yeah, but I think Probe is on a different axis than those ones. Like, given hand insight and the ability to draw a card, like I think is a lot different from like Dismember giving somebody like a better removal spell or Mutagenic Growth giving somebody a better pump spell.
So too powerful for Modern.
Well, Masters. It seems like you go in any deck. I mean, I guess those other ones would too, but I mean, it doesn't matter your archetype; you just play it.
Yeah, I think that's why they didn't reprint it. Especially in a draftable format, because no matter what you're playing, you would just play Gitaxian Probe.
Right, but
free information. I mean,
every single one of those cards that you play, no matter what you play, you're going to see X1's Gutshots of sideboard cards.
There's decks though where you don't want to play Mutagenic Growth. Like, yeah, you'll probably play Dismember and Gutshot, but
But how good is deal yourself two damage to deal someone one damage if you're not in red on with the Gutshot as opposed to take two damage to draw a card and see what your opponent's doing.
So, like, if your opponent has an X1 that is killing you, two life, deal. It's dead.
The other thing could have been, is there a storm archetype possibly in here? Maybe they didn't want it to be too powerful with that.
There's not a storm archetype.
Very disappointed about that.
Well, all right. You know, the point is, to be honest, I don't care that your taxing probe is in there. It's a $1.50 or $2 or something along those lines. I think that's fair for a common that gets played as much as it does. But
sure.
Serum Visions is the one that really pisses me off. And I guess since we're on the topic here, like, it just seems so... It seems... Everyone assumed that it was going to be in Modern Masters, right? And when it was not, it's like... So then the adverse effect happens. If the goal of Modern Masters is to make these cards more accessible to new players, Serum Vision's a staple in, like, okay, number two most played card in Modern. It's a huge part of so many decks, right? So that's a barrier to entry. If people are not willing to spend $8 on a common, I can totally understand that, especially leading up to a set that you would guess is going to have this card printed in, at least at an uncommon level, okay? So if it's not printed, now is the cost going to go up? Yes, probably, right? It's going to hit $10, isn't it?
Sorry, go ahead, Daryl.
I think cost will go up if demand goes up. Like, if people all try and break into these blue decks and these combo decks, like, so you're seeing people are able to make it into Split Infernal by getting their Kiki Jikis and their Split Infernals and their Spells Guide. They're able to make it into Bloom Titan by getting their Primeval Titans and their Bounce Lands. So I think the cost of that card will go up because the demand for the decks that are playing it.
Right, and every time they print a Modern Master set, the demand goes up. That's the point of the format, to get more people involved in it, right? And so you're looking through the cards, and you're like, well, this deck isn't too expensive, and you overlook that common that's not played in Legacy and not played in Standard, right? You don't think it's an $8 card, and you don't think it's going to add, you know, what, $32 onto the cost of your deck for four commons?
Modern decks are still really expensive too. It's unfortunate. I was looking at some the other day, and I'm like, man, you know, I know some people have different budgets, different backgrounds, different jobs, but for the average Joe, Magic is expensive, and this is still very expensive. And I wonder if, like, Wizards did that, like, strategically on purpose with stuff like Serum Visions. I wonder if they didn't want it to see as much play, and so now this makes it such an elitist card that it doesn't see as much play. I don't know. I mean,
so I can speak to, like, a lot of Wizards policy because I've just read it over the years. They don't care, like, they don't care about card price to a degree because they don't control the secondary market. They want to put enough things in there to push the product, as well as, if you look at something like the reserve list, not piss off the people who are invested to tank the value. So they're striking that balance.
Except then they go and ban Birthing Pod and a bunch of other things, and people get outraged.
Sure. I mean, you literally can't please them all, but, like, it's like their goal is to avoid doing that as often as possible.
All right. Well, I'm gonna put these links in the show notes here as well, but I've got, like, links that go right to the TCG player page for both Serum Visions and Goblin Guide, which is also not included in Modern Masters 2.
Are there any of these other cards that really piss you off that they're not in there? Goblin Guide. I'm looking at all the red X's. Dispel is in another set that was recently standard printed. Kitchen Finks they reprinted in Modern Masters 1, so it's kind of available.
I'm really disappointed about that Goblin Guide. I mean, I have my playset, but for, like, any player, like, red is always one of the cheapest decks to build. I mean, that's my appeal always too. But, like, for people getting into the game, it's one of the first decks that even at a shop, like, most people say, just go build a red deck because it's cheap and easy to build. And, like, if Guide's not going to be cheap, not a lot out there. I don't know. You'll have to go into Soul Sisters or buy an event deck or something.
Right. I was really hoping for that one, especially as a legacy option.
Now, what are the chances that, especially with a card like Goblin Guide, maybe not so much Serum Visions because of the Scry, but what if Goblin Guide is planned to come out in Origins as a reprint?
That could be. That's possible.
Yep, or Battle for Zendikar or something.
Yeah, or Battle for Zendikar. That could very well be a spot where it still comes out. As I think they have to reprint it because pretty soon, I mean, Red Deck has always been one of the cheaper options to play, and pretty soon it's just not going to be an option for those people that don't have the money to drop on Goblin Guide.
All right, well, check out these links, because the reason I'm putting one here, there's a graph on the middle of the page when you scroll down a little bit, and you can see the price trajectory for both of them. And Goblin Guide, when that was, like, included in the spoilers, you know, it was, like, kind of unofficially included in the spoilers for a couple of weeks, and people kind of assumed it was going to be printed then after that. You can see the median price on that card dropping you know, starting in March 5th, March 7th, maybe that must have been before it even showed up. But in the last couple of days here, as it was now confirmed that it's not involved in Modern Masters 2, it shot up now and is $2 higher than it was sitting at beforehand. And the same thing is true of Serum Visions. The median price on Serum Visions, at least on TCG Player, you could get it for $8, right? And there's a huge spike in the last couple of days now, and it's headed up. Now it's $10. Okay, I mean, that's a $2 increase is huge for a common. And it hasn't plateaued, you know, it's like still on the way up. So I don't know where that's going to end up, but it's got to be reprinted. And some people have speculated not only Origins, but even possibly an FNM promo. There was another modern promo coming out after July. You guys hear about that?
Yeah, for August.
Oh, is it? Okay, yeah, right. So the month after July is a modern promo.
Yep. Because it's Path for July and then unannounced one for August.
Cool. Well, fingers crossed that's it. I don't know if that's really going to do much to, you know, to bring it down or not, but I'm concerned. I want to play those decks. You know, I've been waiting for that to be reprinted so I could get into them rather than, you know, buying them out at $8.
When does this thing, Modern Masters, when does it officially come out? It's out before the GP, right?
Yeah, 2 weeks.
So in 2 weeks, we'll be able to play?
Yeah, it's out the weekend of the 24th, so a week before the GP.
Oh, man.
Memorial Day weekend.
All right, I'm still excited. I don't care how crappy the set is.
All right, well, like, here... Yeah, go on. Sorry.
I was just saying, I like one sub-theme I saw there's a little bit of. I don't know how much there will be, but it looks like there's elementals in this thing, too. I saw there's the Harbinger's in it. I know Soulstoke is in it, which you can, like, dash elementals into play. And then it looks like, I'm just looking through it right now to see if he's in here. Maybe Harbinger's not in there, but there's a lot of elemental cards, and there's a lot of, like decent cards, like Fulminator Mage, that were reprinted that are elementals.
Yeah.
John, you missed Muldrifter.
Yeah. You know, even though Muldrifter's blue, definitely one of my top five favorite Magic cards.
Oh, man. Yeah, I love me some Muldrifter.
I love me some Muldrifter.
Mirror Entity is an elemental.
He is good elemental, yes.
All right, then there's an article I'll post as well. Take a look at this. Please read this if you have any concerns about this set, because it really, like, lays it down for you. This is the expected value of Modern Masters, and this is, like, by Saffron Olive, so... He goes into like a lot of depth about what you can expect to get out of here per pack, which the cost of a pack now is $10. I don't know if you heard that, up from what, 6 or 7 from the original Modern Masters.
I think it was, somebody said it was only $1 more than the original Modern Masters. Didn't seem like that to me, but was the original Modern Masters $9 or was it $8?
The original one I thought was $6.99.
Yeah, oh yeah, look, it says here $7. So $3 more. That's a lot.
$3 more for what looks like a worse set. That doesn't seem like a good deal.
Yep.
And unfortunately, people value it at like $15 a pack when it comes out.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's crazy.
So, shocking point from this article. I'm going to quote Saffron Olive directly here. He says, "In researching this article, I stumbled across the fact that Modern Masters 2015, a set that has an MSRP of $10 a pack, 2.5 times the cost of a regular pack, has more bulk rares than Dragons of Tarkir."
Oh, no.
Is that not sad?
Oh, that's gross.
So you can get a box right now for $300. There are fewer packs than a typical core set block, or a typical, you know, block. And there are, what, 4 mythics in it.
Okay, yeah, so
the value per mythic is higher.
Find your buddy who's getting the sub-retail boxes. Because that's the only thing that makes sense.
Yeah. This just sounds like, ew. Like, sounds awful.
Yeah, save your money. Don't play the lottery. Don't buy a $300 box and hope to get 4 good mythics. Go buy those 4 good mythics instead. You can get 7 Dark Confidants for $300 or 7 Emrah Cruels for $300, you know?
I mean, the sad part is that I think a lot of the people that are going to buy a lot of the set are going to buy it really early, because I think most of the people that invest a ton into this set, like, do so because they're going to Vegas for the GP and they have to draft like as many times as possible. I know one of the guys, Daryl, you know this guy, Joe, he's a legacy player in our area. And he was telling me on one of our road trips that he played probably like 30 MM drafts before going to the GP. And, like, if you're doing that, like, if you got to get the practice to do well, I mean, that's an insane amount of money on a bad set.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, like, it's the reason it's $300 is because so many people pre-ordered it, and there's so many people that have pre-ordered registration for GP Vegas, you know? So they've already sold plenty of product. It's already accounted for.
Yeah, they timed the spoiler well that people would get a ton of those pre-orders in before seeing exactly what it was going to look like here.
I'm not saying that I am upset with Wizards. I'm just strongly disappointed in this product here. I trust them, and I know that there's a reason for what they do, but, man, charging $10 for a pack of crap like this, it seems like a money grab to me. All right, well, I'm all set on that one. If you guys want to move on, or if anyone's got any last comments on, I mean, we kind of beat a dead horse
here. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm just hoping that it's a much better draft format than it appears on paper. Because to me, that's the point of these sets like this, is to have a really good draft format. So maybe it'll surprise us all and be a good draft format, but my hopes are not staying up in the air.
All right, insert bumper, Corey.
All right, bumper.
Today I am going to talk a little bit about kind of an open standard approach here. I was recently having a discussion, and Ryan, you were on this chat thread and probably saw a good amount of this too, about, one, Magic obviously being expensive, but a lot of people being turned off to standard because cards rotate so fast. And even me, like, I am, financially not the greatest shape, so it's getting pretty expensive to play Magic. And we were talking about, like, the best ways to approach not only getting into cards, but staying into cards, but also playing competitively still. And I think, like, when I see a lot of pros and talk to a lot of pros, one of the big things that they often stress is to play more limited. And that way you can have a lot of cards that you're either – you'll have extra stuff to trade to other people to get the stuff you need for standard decks. You can borrow what you don't have, the last 10 cards, what have you. But it's just a lot better way to play, you know, a hefty amount of limited rather than buying so many standard rares. And one of the other points, too, that we were talking about and that I was mentioning was that really standard is not as expensive as everybody thinks it's out to be. Because if you invest early in the format, like, for instance, when Theros is about to rotate or something, if you invest in a lot of the con stuff, you won't have a ton of stuff to buy, especially if you buy the 10 or 20 rares that a lot of these decks share. I mean, I've got 5 or 6 decks in my bag, and there's only about 10 or, you know, 12 cards that I have to move between them. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious what your guys' thoughts are on investment in this. But, I mean, this is kind of me just talking about, you know, how I think you should try to shape your card pool.
Yeah, I think the best way is to play limited, because you're going to get you're obviously going to get some cards playing limited, and you can then use those cards to trade for whatever deck you want to build. And then once you have that built, can obviously still continue to play limited, because then you can take those cards and either turn them into store credit at your local shop or trade them for other cards. But to go with that, I also think playing 1 or 2 decks, and if you are playing multiple decks, I think it's a great idea to play decks that are sharing cards, so you don't have to have that, well, I have every card in standard right now, so I can play any deck I want, but that is really expensive to do that. So by choosing a deck and kind of playing it through and making the tweaks through that, and maybe choosing a similar deck that uses a lot of those cards while still playing limited, I think it's going to be your best bet with the investment, so that even when you continue to play limited and you open those bomb rares, you trade them away or take them to your shop for store credit, so that when the next set comes out, you have a credit built up so you can purchase the new cards that you need to adjust your decks or go through from there.
Yeah, Ryan, I think that – sorry, go ahead, Corey.
Oh, quick comment. That or you don't even open the packs at all. You just use them and play more limited.
Yeah,
also
that's
true.
The
also
bank
true.
Bankrolling is the biggest thing. That was what I was talking about a lot today too. I think bankrolling is huge. Like, take your credit that you get and re-roll it into a tournament, especially with limited. Like, I've been doing that for the past 4 or 5 weeks. I've been going 2-1 at draft. I've been getting 3 packs, and that at our store, let you trade that in, and you only pay $5 for the next draft. So essentially, I've paid just like a perennial $5 each time to draft. And I've gotten cards out of the deal. I've gotten experience playing limited, which is good for deck building and just being able to get used to mechanics and playing with lesser decks that are not as automatic. So I think it's good all around to do that. But, yeah, bankrolling is definitely huge.
And I think, especially like coming from the legacy modern side of the fence, what format are you trying to play? Because if you're trying to get into legacy or modern, you kind of preclude yourself from playing standard and limited unless you're going to try and utilize your entire standard and limited collection to trade for legacy and modern cards, which is really hard to do. Like, people aren't willing to part with their Tarmogoyfs for, you know, Dragon Lord Ojitai's and stuff like that. They're not, they're really not willing to do that.
Well, so, Daryl, that's one of the things I was talking about too, is like, if you get into legacy or modern, I think the investment approach is completely different there. Like, if that's your format of choice.
Yeah, and I wanted to bring that up because, you know, I agree with all three of you that if you're going to play standard, drafting is the best way to do it. Because, you know, if you go infinite, like you're doing, like, I'll pay Perennial $5, play 3 hours of Magic, and get three packs, and run that back for the rest of forever, that's great. And even if you win a draft, you get a free draft. Like, perfect. That's excellent. You're accumulating standard cards. But if your goal is to sort of move into a bigger format where, like, the investment is a lot more upfront, you have two options. You can scout the decks and say, you know, this is the style of deck I like to play, and I just have to bite the bullet on these. What is the most effective way for me to shift my stock in such a way that I can acquire that deck? Because especially in the difference, and I know our listeners know this from Legacy and Modern Standard, is like there's a lot less maintenance from Legacy and Modern. So, you know, once you get your burn deck, Eidolon of the Great Rebel, unless they do something outstanding, is going to be a staple in your burn deck for a long time. Lightning Bolt, same thing. Lava Spike, same deal. You know, the cards that you see flexing in and out, moving around, you know, your Lightning Helixes, your Boros Charms, your Tarkus Commands, your Skullcracks, all these cards that are kind of flexing in because they started to print better and better cards to fit those slots, those are the cards you'll have to do a little maintenance on. And those are cards that you're going to pick up to play standard anyways. So, you know, your modern and your standard kind of flow very well if the cards are powerful enough. The problem is kind of the legacy versus standard debate, because there's very rare times that you'll see a standard card make a splash in legacy.
Well, and
so
those
it'll be easy for you to, it'll be very easy to recognize and very easy to acquire.
And those are minimal investments too, like you were talking about, for the most part. Occasionally you'll run across your Snapcaster Mage where you have to get something chased, but legacy, like you said, is largely an investment format. So you can either decide that you want to invest in a deck, which is largely not going to change, or you can invest in the staples like Wastelands and Dual Lands, and you can try to, you know, get a base for maybe building towards two or three decks. And I think both, like, formats, that's where the community plays a big part too, because our area is fortunate to have a huge legacy community, so there is a lot of borrowing you can do, but that's not the case in a lot of areas. And versus standard is a really popular format, so in most areas, people are going to have some of the cards to borrow, especially given that most of the standard cards are very cheap. So other than the Planeswalkers and, you know, some of the, like, Super Chase Rares, you know, stuff like Siege Rhino and Manus Rider and those kind of cards are all, like, $5 or less. They're really cheap, and most people will have, like, a playset or a couple extra.
Yeah. Like, I know it's easy for me to walk into the shop on a Friday night and say, hey, somebody hand me a standard deck. And you'll have four people be like, here you go. Whereas if you walk into the shop on a Thursday or a Saturday or something and say, hey, we got an extra legacy deck laying around? That's a little tougher, buddy.
Right.
You might be able to get away with, like, I can hand you Miracles, but you have to play Hollowed Fountain. or you know, you might be able to get away with something like that. Or I can hand you X, but I don't have enough Tundras, so you have to play Hollowed Fountain. And
those are tough compromises, too.
Yeah, you might not get to play Force of Will, which is super awkward. So, like, it's like those are much harder to do than somebody to hand you a standard.
And even if standard decks are missing cards, typically compromises are not that big a deal most of the time, just because the cards are similar values and stuff. But, you know, legacy in that respect, I mean, like Daryl, you were saying, it's a good investment, especially if you do build a deck, because you mentioned burn, and I've had my legacy burn deck forever. And I have rarely ever had to do any tweaks on that thing. Once I got, you know, the Chain Lightnings, the Price of Progresses, and that sort of stuff, like, I had the cards I needed, and the cards that I had to, like, interflux were, you know, $2 or less most of the time. Yeah,
like your Pyroblasts, your Tormod's Crypts, your Relics, your role players that are sideboard cards or neat mainboard tweaks, or like Eidolon of the Great Revel, which I think is like $20 now or something. I didn't know that happened.
That's pretty expensive.
Is it really?
I don't know if it's up that high, but I know it's fluctuated a little bit.
Because I remember it being like $5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can get it for $7.
Okay.
It's also just a note. I'm not the finance guru, but I think it's a good investment because it's in a very small set that did not get opened a lot.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But yeah, you can see like those cards that like, you know, if you can identify, hey, this is a play card in Legacy. Hey, they put it on a creature. I think I'm going to buy that. And so like those are easy cards as they get printed to sort of see this is the direction I should go. And they'll probably be able to make an impact somewhere. It's like really fresh cards, like something like a Snapcaster Mage. Like people knew Snapcaster Mage was pretty good. And it took playing it in Legacy for people to go, this card is just not even reasonable. Snapcaster Brainstorm is not okay. Snapcaster Source of Plowshares, not even close to something that should be allowed. Pyroblast, get out of here.
So, Daryl, if somebody's getting into Legacy, what would you recommend like the thing to buy?
So, it depends on what kind of deck you want to play. I would suggest so this is going to sound really strange. I would suggest that if you're going to get into Legacy, you just proxy up a couple decks and just play them into the ground and say, if I put my money into this deck and I have to play this deck forever, am I ever going to get bored of playing this deck?
But see, that's one of the problems and with Legacy is that, like, how do you not get bored? That's why I don't play it as much because I get so bored of it. You know?
So a lot of getting bored with it is you're looking at it as, like, this is a thing I'm doing, whereas, like, if you look at it as this is a skill that I'm mastering, like my deck has a skill set that I'm going to master and be able to execute against any opponent better than they're going to be able to execute, then you go from seeing it as kind of a dull format where there's crappy turn one kills to, you know, the people who have the finesse and the art of Storm and the finesse of Sensei's Divining Top and the skill of Omnitel and how to play around things. That's when you start to see the format differently, is when you go, I'm not going to just jam this deck a million times. I'm going to become the master of this deck. I'm going to do everything I can to be better than everyone else doing whatever they're doing, playing my deck. That's when Legacy becomes a thing that can encapture you forever. And, like, I did that twice. I did it during college. I played Enchantress, which, for those of you that have never played it, you play enchantments, you draw cards, and you lock yourself in a bubble to where your opponent can't kill you. It sounds like the literal most boring deck ever to play, but trying to figure out how many cards you can afford to give up for solitary confinement, how quickly you can lock yourself in a bubble, and like what are your percentages to be able to stay in it, and things like that. How quickly can I get another enchantment online so that I can do this and this and this? It gets to be a very phonetic art at that point. And then you sort of develop out into another place. So find a deck that will help that you can turn into an art form. And then once you do, invest early in the things that will be played across the format. So if you say, I want to play Omnitel, well, I would tell you to buy Force of Will before you bought City of Traders. Because Force of Will is going to get played in every single blue deck in the history of ever. So if you have to make a stop on your way to Omnitel to play something else that's blue, like say you have to make a stop and play High Tide, which only has like one or Morpho, yeah. You only have to have Force of Will. That's relatively cheap.
Yeah. So you can and like within the window of like what's being printed right now, you can kind of pick up on what cards are showing up in internal formats, and I think that's a good strategy to kind of maintain your collection and keep value in your collection. So, like Thoughtseize, obviously, and all the fetch lands, like get your playsets of the fetch lands now. And
Deathrite Shaman, Abrupt Decay, there are a lot of cards that saw print that.
Right.
One thing too that, and I want to mention this because I got it in the notes here, but also, well, this is probably not endorsed by Wizards, so I don't know how much I want to go into this, but there's some programs out there online where you can play free Magic, and you know, even if just you're proxying at home or at the shop, like I highly encourage people to play as many of the decks as possible that way. Like you said, Daryl, like be sure before you invest, whether it be Legacy or Standard, go out and play the decks and find what's fun. And hopefully you find two or three that all share some cards and you can invest in. And with respect to Legacy too, there's a lot of Legacy decks that have a ton of crossover in Modern. So you may just be able to hit a deck that you can play in multiple formats and get less bored.
Yeah. And, you know, part of it too is trading, which is like the worst interaction for me. I like hate that aspect of the game, and it's why I do it on Puka all the time and on TCG Player. But like, people have different trading styles, and like the people that you trade with have different trading styles and different interests in the game too. And so if you're trading with a bunch of standard players, like, they're interested in your standard cards. But if you're trading with a bunch of legacy players, they're interested in offloading all their standard cards on you, and they're holding on to their eternal staples. So to find those cards, like, the people that have them are the legacy players. They're not like willing to part with those. So to trade for the eternal staples and to trade for the legacy cards, it's like it could take years and years and years to get your deck together that way. They're not interested in trading up for your standard chaff, you know?
That's the one unfortunate part, so, is the barrier is basically spending the money.
So, yeah, like, the thing is, you will, like, for deck cards like Dual Lands, Wastelands, and shit, I've seen Legacy players trade them, and it's at really weird one-sided rates. And so if you're trying to just get out of standard and win a Legacy, you can do it, but a lot of your cards will get hit by a list, and that's really awkward. That's like the people that just move those things make it really awkward, and so it's like super unfortunate. Because, like, you know, if you hit that awkward edge, just because of how rare the cards are, then you might not trade with that person. But you might find people that, like, I think I shifted a bunch of Modern staples for a bunch of standard cards that I'm going to play in Modern. Because, you know, I respect that, like, these are a staple and it's going to be played forever? Yeah. But there's also utility in, like, it's a bargaining chip that's going to move me somewhere else to try and do something in that same format that I want to do. So, like, you'll find people sort of all across the spectrum. It's just you have to just put in the time to find the binder grinders that will trade those things with you. So,
yeah. I want to hear your philosophies on that and how your trading styles are, because, like, if you're trading, like, eternal cards for standard cards, To trade them value for value seems kind of not fair for one of the parties involved, because the standard cards are obviously going to lose value when they get shifted out of format, whereas the legacy cards are going to hold value or probably even go up. So if you're trading, like, you know, a $50 legacy card for $5-$10 standard cards, that seems like the person that's trading the standard cards is losing out by a long shot. Those $10 cards are going to be $2-$3 when they cycle out of format.
Well, I think that's the biggest reason why it's so hard to trade for those legacy cards, is because of that. I mean, obviously, shifting the other way, the legacy player would do that, but that's why you don't see a whole lot of the legacy cards being traded for standard cards. I mean, that's why I wouldn't trade for standard cards with my legacy cards, because I'm going to be trading for this Dragonlord Orzhetai that's $30 now, but in 6 months, it's going to be worth $10. So, I mean, I think that's the biggest reason why a lot of those trades you don't see happen.
Right, and I'm mostly wondering, like, Ryan, if you're in the situation where you've got a legacy card and you're trying to get into a standard deck and you want to trade for, you know, a bunch of Siege Rhinos, would you value those Siege Rhinos at an extra dollar if you're trading for maybe an eternal card, because of the fact that you know that they're going to rotate out and go down in value?
I personally wouldn't. I usually, when I trade, I just trade whatever the current value is of either card. I think that's the fairest way, because as much as we'd like to be able to predict what the card's going to be worth, no one can truly predict what the different cards are going to be worth down the road.
So, like, go ahead, John.
I was just saying, I know we're getting pretty heavy on time here too, so I want to get into one more thing, but go ahead, Daryl.
I was going to say, like, the way I do it is, like, sure, this card has more value than whatever card, you know, 6 months down the road, but I'm going to generate some sort of utility for me now by making this swap. So if dollar for dollar, you know, a trade I made this weekend will be really bad for me, like a year down the road, but I'm going to use that card for the year between there. So I'm creating sweat equity and utility on that card for me. So I got fun out of it. So, you know, that's another measure of, you know, sure, you may lose dollars down the road, but is the equity you lost in that trade, did you earn it back with the utility of being able to play that card?
I don't know. I mean, I always enjoy a trade better when the person on the other side of the trade is like a little bit compassionate or a little bit understanding of the fact that you're giving up all these standard cards and things like that at, you know, at the value that they currently are. Or you're trying to get the standard cards, I should say, at the value that they currently are, when you know you're going to be losing out in the long run.
That's my biggest problem with trading in general, though, and one of the reasons that I pretty much never trade is because compassion is something that you rarely find when it comes to trading. Yeah. Everybody's trying to get a deal, or it breaks down to everybody's just using magic.tcg player mid, and, like, it's so boring. It's like, you know, to get a good trade or trade where both sides have a smile on their face is so rare, I feel like. I see a lot of people trading, but it's always one person either just getting a leg up on somebody, or it's just trading for cards really that people don't need. That's the hardest thing for me. Like, I want to trade more, but I feel like Puka is maybe, like, the only outlet for it.
I got that smiley face trade this weekend where both people were happy. I traded a Blood Moon. I traded a Blood Moon for a Dragonlord, which died. I'm going to lose in the long run by trading that Blood Moon.
Yeah.
I'm going to play that Dragonlord, which died. I'm going to play it a lot.
What format is that going in, Daryl?
I'm going to play that in a Modern deck.
Oh, baby.
Ooh, I was hoping to see that card in Modern.
I'm going to play it with Minimo in a Flash deck because that thing looked, that blue-white deck we covered last week looked sweet, and I'm going to try it. So I picked myself up an Ojutai to give it a spin. But we'll move. I think we have some. Ryan, I think you have something to discuss?
Before we go to Ryan's, I have one last thing I wanted to go into. Speaking of Ojutai and other standard cards, I wanted to talk about what you guys think the top cards going into this week for standard are, and I think one of the biggest things right now would be the Edict effects. Since Abzan, Megamorph, and Esper Control and some of these decks are so popular, Self-Inflicted Wound seems like one of the best cards to play right now, along with Foul Tongue Invocation.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I don't know, are there any other standout cards that you guys think you've seen recently that'd be good for coming into this weekend if people are playing in tournaments?
There is an excellent sideboard card, but give me a minute to get on my phone and find it on the Gatherer.
Sure.
So,
are you thinking Arashan Cleric?
Not what I'm thinking, actually.
Oh, okay, because that's been showing up a lot, and it's like seems to be the hoser for all those red aggro decks.
Well, one deck, that card is interesting. I've played that a decent amount, and I think it's okay. I'm not sure if it's the best answer for red aggro, because a lot of times they can still get through it or kill it, but it is still a good roadblock. But I've been playing a lot of that Mardu deck that took second place at Grand Prix Toronto. That thing seems extremely well positioned. It's got 4 Crackling Dooms and 2 Foul Tongue Invocation in the main deck. So it's got a lot of ammo against the Esper Control decks and also just the field in general. And then I think that it properly addresses the stuff that's in Abzan because it has like Draconic Roar. It has flyers that are bigger than their ground creatures. I think that deck seems really well poised. I know it had like some showings at PPTQs last weekend around here. I don't know how they did, but I think it has the tools to kind of beat some of these decks, and it's got a really good sideboard too.
Okay, I got it, boys. My card to look for in standard in the sideboards of every deck with black in it is Agent of Erebos.
There is a lot of graveyard stuff going on right now.
The Den Predictor Deathmist Raptor shenanigans need to end, and this guy stomps them out.
My only hate with Agent Erebos is that it's not a good card on its own. Like, it's overcosted Grizzly Bear.
Oh, it's bad. Yeah, it's
bad. You have to hope you hit him, like, right at the right time with it. But it is, like, it brings up the point that, like, graveyard hate is needed. Like, the graveyards are getting heavily used right now. Like, Morph is so heavy right now in standard.
Also, if you're in the market for absolutely absurd, you could play Ghastly Conscription. I mean,
what is that card? I don't even know what
that is. I have no idea what that card is.
7 mana.
Daryl bringing up bad draft cards.
7 mana sorcery. Exile all creature cards from target player's graveyard in a face down pile. Shuffle that pile, then manifest those cards.
Gas just officially got real janky.
Oh my god.
All right, I mean, I don't know about that.
If you're in the market for something like that against the Tormod's
Crypt. Tormod's Crypt is legal, by the way, but
it is
probably a bad card.
Still. It is, but like those were two cards I saw. The first one I was actually high on, which is
Agent of Erebos, could see some play, especially
with,
if it has
Constellation.
A
Constellation. Right. Yeah, like, but like the second one looks sweet.
In reality, though, and Offense of the Foremost, I think, is the best graveyard answer.
Yeah,
and it's a huge undercosted creature.
Wait, that card has, like, exile your graveyard?
Yeah, it says when a creature card's put in your opponent's yard, you exile it.
Oh my god, that card's ridiculous.
Yeah, that should be a 4 of in most lists this week because
I learned something.
The Megamorph's so big right now. People are playing 2 or 3 of them. I'm like, no, you got to play 4 right now.
So I think this Abzan mid-range deck has a lot of the, like, the Trump tools right now. Because, okay, so I'm going to go off on a tangent here real quick. I played the Rakshasa Death Dealer as a one-of in my Sultai deck at the PPTQ. per John's advice, I was ready to, like, go back
it on that idea. It looks good, man. Like, I saw you breaking it out.
Yeah, and it like, single-handedly took a game against Control on a few occasions in a few matchups. So it's great. I mean, that card is, like, the ultimate, like, Control answer. If you can cast that creature with the regenerate mana, you're in good shape, you know? I mean, aside from, like, Fault on Invocation. But Anafenza is great against the graveyard strategies, as it is a good blocker for the aggro decks. I don't know, man. I think Abzan is the way to go.
So thanks for making me feel stupid, guys, because I totally forgot about Anafenza. Like, 100%.
Well, it can only be played in one deck, so that's the unfortunate part. But yeah, I mean, Abzan's really good right now. I mean, it is good against the Tarka Red. The matchup is... The matchup can be pretty good for a Tarka Red, but it's real close. It's got to be piloted well on both sides, but Abzan has the tools to beat that deck. And then on the flip side, like your Esper matchup, like, it's real hard for Esper. I mean, the best of pilots might be able to do well, but I have been becoming less and less impressed with Esper. Every time I play it or see it, I see pilots struggling more with it. And granted, it did win, like, a GP, like, a week or two ago, but I think that deck's getting much harder to win with because the bullseye was big enough that people are starting to figure it out.
Yeah.
And they're putting the hate cards in, the Thought Seizes are coming in, the Morphs are coming in. I spent that whole PPTQ, Corey, trying to dodge your deck because that looks so nasty with the whip and all the shenanigans. I played against a Jund whip player who also made top eight with you there, and he just crushed me into oblivion. So
really, I think it's a bad matchup for me. I think I'm too slow. You know,
against that guy or against red?
Against red.
I was playing the bigger red deck on Saturday too, which is a little bit slower. I mean, it's got some flyers and stuff, but I think Atarka is a little better against Sultai whip. I played it on Sunday. Against Sultai, but it can go either way, man. I don't know. Do you have Sidisi in your deck?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, despite having Sidisi's four of, despite having Drown and Soros, despite having Bile Blights, like, that stuff just isn't good enough.
Well, part of the problem too is that deck is like, that deck beats itself when it loses games. I think that's the only reason it's been tier 1.5 is because sometimes you get really clunky draws, or sometimes you get a normal draw, but it's just too slow because of all the tap lands. All the stuff that you're putting in your graveyard and dirtling around with. Like, the deck's super powerful and has an insane late game, and it is really good at grinding. But sometimes either it beats itself or you have an okay start and you lose yourself in the grind. Like, you piloted it decently well when I was watching you, but, like, I know a lot of people I've seen pilot it just make some mistakes, and it really cost them.
Yeah, I mean, the tap lands are a big issue, but the mana cost is high. And so mulliganing is a big decision-making process in that deck. And
your payoff cards also have to really hit. Like, if you play, you know, like a Sidisi and somebody has a Lightning Strike ready for it and responds to the trigger, or if you play a Tasigur and somebody has a Roast, like, those kind of plays can blow the whip player out pretty bad. So, like, you really have to make sure your payoff cards, you know, stick, and that can't always be an option.
Yeah, the Sidisi Lightning Strike response was a big issue for me. I was always, like, sandbagging my Sidisi's when the red deck had the two mana untapped.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, that's tough. I mean, two blockers is great against that deck, but when they can, like, burn out your dude when you cast him, you're four mana tapped out, and then you die the next turn because you have no creatures on the board.
Yep, some of those hands you just run out of gas if you don't have the tutors, you know, continually going. But we're going way off.
Yeah, we are.
Brian, take us over here, man.
So I wanted to talk a little about the draft format. So we had the Grand Prix in Atlantic City over the past weekend. I know John was watching it. I was glued to Twitch watching as much of the draft as I could. So I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on, how do you like the format? How do you compare it to other draft formats in the past? As well as, when drafting it, are there particular colors that you want to draft? Are there particular colors that you feel are better than others? And what do you think are the best colors and what do you think are the worst colors? Because a lot of the pros out there are saying green is by far the worst color. And especially after watching a lot of the drafts this weekend, it appeared blue and black were all over the place and seemed to be doing the best. So I kind of want to get your guys' thoughts on this as well.
I mean, I love the format. I think it's a ball of fun. I've been playing it a lot. And I think that I think black and red are the best colors in this format, not necessarily together, but just individually the best colors, because black blue, like you said, is a really popular archetype. It's really strong, and the rares at the top end are really good. And then black red is also incredibly strong. Like, I feel like those are usually like the 2-1 and 3-0 draft decks, but this format's pretty open. Like, I've drafted like 5 or 6 times now, and I've drafted something different every time and done well with it. So, like, I feel like even though players slight the green cards, a lot of times you'll get into those drafts where it's super wide open and you can just go into it. And the creatures, like every green in every set, are really big and really powerful. And if you're using the, not ferocious, what is it, formidable
yep.
mechanic, you can get, you know, use some really early beatdowns with it. But I think, like they mentioned, like in the AC coverage, that a lot of times if green, like if even two people are drafting it, it dries up really quickly, and Fate Reforged doesn't have a lot going on.
Yeah, well, I think that's why so many of the pros don't like it, is because as far as in the Fate Reforged, I mean, there's very few cards in green. And on top of it, they're, as soon as the green player sees them, they're going to take them. So I know that's kind of why they hate it. But, I mean, I've drafted a lot online. I've drafted a lot at the shop. And, I mean, I particularly love playing green-white, specifically the bolster, because a lot of times you'll see, like, a Sandcrafter Mage table on the first pack. And that card, to me, is insane. I mean, a 2-2 that could be a 3-3 or boost another creature to attack with that turn. So I've been having a lot of fun with green-white, specifically like the bolster thing, because a lot of times you'll get into pack three, and since a lot of people aren't in green, you get a third pick, Sabretooth, for instance.
Yeah, that card's really good. I agree with you on bolster and green-white. I think the white bolster cards are incredibly strong in this format, because I think they're super aggressive, and this format oftentimes, like especially if you're playing blue-black, you're typically playing a slower blue-black deck. A lot of your payoff cards are at 5 mana. And, like, if you have the white bolster deck, you can sometimes just get on the ground super quick and you have, like, 5 dudes out before they're doing anything.
Is dragons a color? Because Michael J. Flores made that a thing.
What?
So, yeah. Do we not... The joke is dragons a color.
Yeah, but, Daryl, that's a good point. Like, the rare... this, I feel like this draft format's really rare-centric. Like, you basically just want to open a dragon.
Yeah, I feel like dragons is a color, and I just want to be playing dragons. Like, I don't care if I open, like, an Ojutai and an Atarka. Like, I'll play them both somehow. I'll figure it out.
You have to. That's the beauty of this draft set. My second draft in, I got a Dragonlord Atarka. I got the 7-mana green dragon that fights a dude when he comes into play and then gets counters at the end of the turn, or whenever you fight another creature. And I had the green-white dragon that puts extra counters on creatures when they get counters. Like, this format has a lot of dragons, and I was playing, like, explosive vegetation into them.
Yep.
So, I mean, it is definitely, like, you're having little kid fun with it.
Yeah, it does have a lot of dragons, but, I mean, obviously you have the mythic dragons, but a lot of, like, the 6-mana uncommon dragons, unfortunately, aren't that great.
Yeah,
true. Kind of underwhelming. However, I love the scale guard one that puts counters on itself and other counters go on it.
Those can be trap cards, like you mentioned, though, because they're underpowered. You have to have the right deck for them. You have to have a lot of support and early pressure to keep off of, you know, your opponent. But, I like the green-white one I like, too, but it was definitely a card I wasn't super wild about in that deck. It was just another fun card that was in there. But, like, the blue-black one can be a real trap, too. It's a good card, like the one that if you sacrifice anything, your opponent has to sacrifice a creature or something.
Yeah.
But it's real high up with a curve in a blue-black deck that's already usually high up the curve. And I noticed that some blue-black players that regularly do well at the shop, they often draft a lot of the 2 and 3 drops in the set. Like the Minister of Pain that Daryl had mentioned for Standard earlier, that card seems really good in this format still, just as like a blocker or occasionally get some value out of them. But one of the big things about this set, and the reason I love it, because I often get really frustrated with draft sets because of this, but not this time around, is that this block has a ton of removal.
Yep.
Like every pack you open, there's a ton of red and black removal. Even the blue cards are pretty good. Like you have stuff that like makes dudes into an 0-2 or bounces a guy. Like the one blue 5-drop, and I'm doing terrible at the names here just because I haven't drafted it enough, but – some kind of Aven that when he comes into play, he can either be a 3-3 flyer
yeah,
or he can bounce their dude.
Aven Surveyor and Fate Reforged.
Easily one of the best cards in blue. Like, the card is just insane. The tempo advantage of playing that is just like Manowar was back in the day. And then, you know, you've got, like, all your other colors, like Pacifism and white is really solid. But, yeah, like, the removal is just plentiful in this format. I highly recommend drafting it early because otherwise your opponents will and you will not be left with much.
Yeah, well, the decent thing about this set is you have removal on every color. Obviously, black and red have more, but even green and white get two or three removal spells as well.
So. Yeah, green has that pit fight, which is really good.
Yeah, well, it has Hunt the Weak, and then you also had the other one, too, the newer one.
Daryl, you drafted this a little bit. Corey, have you drafted this?
I did the pre-release. That was it. Yeah.
It's fun. You guys should definitely do it more. Daryl, did you do it for a leg day? Was that what it was? Oh, I think Daryl is taking a little break from us here. But
yeah, he did it for leg day.
Yeah, I mean, this set's a blast. I mean, I think the fact that you can draft a lot of different archetypes. Like you said, Ryan, white-green is not as popular, but still really strong. I've seen some insane bolster decks. There's a green card, the 3-mana card. It's like a sorcery, I believe, but bolster 3 for 3-mana.
Yep.
I think that card's like really undervalued. That card is just insane.
Yeah. Well, and another card that a lot of people don't like, and I played with it a few times online, and it's been nothing but blowouts, is there's a 3-mana instant where you draw a card for every creature with +1/+1 counter, and then those creatures also get indestructible till end of turn. So there have been times where I've had just 4 creatures with 1 counter on it, and the opponent attacks, and I block, save all my creatures, and draw 4 cards. It's pretty nuts.
Yeah, there's a lot of a lot of exceptional combat tricks, I feel like, in this format. I think you have to play a deck. Typically, like, all my decks have, like, somewhere between 7 and 10 non-creature spells because I really like the combat tricks in this format, and I really like different ways to gain value in this format. Most of the creatures can kind of hold their own, and the format, for the most part, unless you're going up against the insane, like, black-red super dash deck, the format is really slow. And I don't think everybody realizes how slow it is, but like a lot of games don't start till turn 3, or a lot of games don't really matter till turn 3 through 5. It's super slow. You have plenty of time to set up. So play your better cards. Don't feel like you have to just like have the perfect curve, like play the better cards and have a couple of cards that, you know, can be played earlier, like as a morph, or it can play defensive roles that are like Ukrid Cobra, which everybody, you know, kind of agrees is one of the best uncommons. It's the 4-mana 2/5 Death Touch. That card's fantastic in this format.
Uncommon? Like,
it's uncommon. It's uncommon, yeah. 2/5 Death Touch. Just, you play it, and, like, the format just stops. Like, nobody can do anything for a while. So if you're in blue-black, you have plenty of time to get to your 5 and 6s then. If you're in another color that's more aggressive, you have something that can handle the stuff you can't deal with. It's just a good overall all-around card.
Yeah, well, especially in blue-black, because it saves you time to play the Poor Man's Grave Titan, which is also an insane uncommon.
Yeah, the Grave Titan's nuts. I had 2 of them the other day when I was playing blue-black, and the card is just super dumb. I mean, it's an exploit. You get a 3/6 for 5-mana, and you get 2/2/2 zombies. So basically, it really is just Grave Titan in this format. And what the exploit cards in general.
I'm sorry.
It's called, Rakshasha?
Gravecrawler or something like that?
Rakshasha Gravecrawler, yeah. And it's one of the other really good uncommons in this set. A lot, and again, another black card. So a lot of black cards are pretty strong. But red's really good in this set. We saw, like, in the top 8 of that AC draft, there was 4 different players with red in their deck. And, you know, cards like Sabretooth Outrider, which is like a 4/2, what is it, first strike, and then if you have Formidable, it gets Trample?
Yeah. No, yeah.
Or the other way around?
It's 4/2 with Trample, and Formidable gives it first strike.
And Goblin Heel Cutter is a common in Fate Reforged, so often in that last pack, you can get a ton of Heel Cutters if your opponents aren't in red, or if they're just not valuing it high enough, and that card is just as big a blowout as it is in Standard, so... like, there was one draft the other day where somebody passed me, 3 people passed me, like, 3 Heel Cutters. They just kept them going down the line. I'm like, okay. I mean, I've already got a dash deck. You guys are going to be in trouble now. That's the one deck I think is, like, the deck that can be super insane if you get all the cards for it. But it can also be really underwhelming if you don't and you try to go for it.
Yeah, I think if you get all the cards, it's really good. But, yeah, if you don't, it's
yeah,
like, be a little clunky.
One of the things they talked about at AC was that the best uncommon in the set is the 4-mana 2/2 in blue that you draw two cards and it dies. And I agree, it's super strong. Like, the card works fantastic with exploit creatures, and it works fantastic as just playing it as a late blocker when you're behind. So it's definitely a power card. And there's a lot of cards like that that are 4 or 5 mana that have insane value.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, this, well, the black is what that, what's the Slumgar's Butcher? Is that it?
The yeah, the mana? One that, the 5-mana exploit, -3/-3.
Yep.
Yep.
Which is, you know, usually mostly a 2-for-1 because you're usually losing, you know, a creature you don't care as much about. You got Merciless Executioner. You just got a ton of cards in black that kill your opponent's creatures very well.
Yep. And then black is still very deep in Fate Reforged. And, I mean, Reach of Shadows is still awesome, so.
Yeah, but yeah, your rares are big. So like, if you pretty much have to try to go for those rares. If you see a 2-color rare, like, I mean, they say you should stay open, and I agree with that. Like, you don't have to get really deep into your 2 colors until pack 2, where you can figure out if you want to change. But if you get a big build around rare, like, it has to be a consideration for your final 70 or your final 40 cards.
Yep.
So. I see there's a juicy deck tech on the list, Corey. Do we want to get into that?
Yeah, Ryan, you all set with your...
I am all set. I'm actually excited to see this deck tech. I had not heard about this deck at all yet, so...
Okay. All right, well, here it is. Juicy deck tech. Cue bumper music. Juicy deck tech is from the Grand Prix Paris. And I do not know what this guy plays, but this is undefeated on day one. I think if you're watching the coverage on Twitch, you would have seen this one on camera. This is 4-color collected company, by, piloted by Johan Dudognan. What do you think? Is that
pretty
right?
Pretty close.
That might have been the best butcher.
is that French? That doesn't sound French to me.
Quite a butcher of the horde there.
We'll call it Johan Dudognan. And then if you know better, then correct us, please, via email or something.
I'm just pulling up.
This deck's crazy. First of all, the land base is, like, I'm not even going to go through it, but it's got a lot of the bivouacs in it and the tapped tricolor lands and then 3-mana confluence. And then just, like, a smattering of temples. But the creature base is as follows. 4 Savage Knuckleblade, 4 Mantis Rider, 4 Goblin Rabblemaster, 4 Fleece Mane Lion, 3 Rattleclaw Mystic, and 3 Seeker of the Way. And then, of course, a full 4 Collected Company. All of those are targets for Collected Company. They're all 3 or less. It's got 3 Stoke the Flame, 2 Dromoka's Command, 2 Valorous Stance, 2 Ojutai's Command, and why not 1 Elspeth, Sun's Champion. Now, this deck reminds me a lot of that 4-color good stuff deck in Modern, because it really is like, all right, we got 4 colors, let's play all the good creatures in it, and then like all the best removal that we can too, since we have access to that. So, Stoke the Flame seems funny in there.
Yeah, what did Mike Flores do? Because this is just ridiculous. Like, people are jamming the random. Like, Stoke is so random in this deck.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's got Rabblemaster, so it's like, that's
You're playing a Collected Company deck, and you got 13 instant or sorceries, and one of them is Stoke. It just is like, this is so bizarre.
Yeah. Ojutai's Command is so random in this deck. The only options for the 2-cost or less to return are Seeker of the Way and Fleece Mane Lion, which seem fine, and then
So let me tell you how good Fleece Mane Lion is.
It's great. I know it's great. I almost died
to it in Modern. My opponent just monsters the Fleece Mane Lion against my control deck, and I'm like, I don't have answer to this card. And then I realized I had a Blood Baron in my sideboard, and that worked out well.
So I guess it's cool if you Ojutai's Command it back into play at the end of their turn and then monstrous it on your next untap. They don't have much time to react to that, you know? So, I don't know. That's one interaction. This deck's got a lot of weird interactions. Collected Company into a Savage Knuckleblade and then 1 more mana to give him haste is kind of cool. Collected Company into a Hornet's Nest. There are 4 of those in the side is, like, really cool.
Rosh and Clerics in there.
Yeah.
Clearly, he doesn't want to lose to red here.
Yep.
I'm kind of wondering where the Deathmist Raptors are.
I know. I was surprised to not see them. They don't have.
Well, there's no package here, though.
Yeah, but I mean, could you potentially drop the Stoke the Flames and maybe the Ojutai's Command and just bring in the package?
Yeah, I think that they're like pretty heavy on instants and sorceries in this deck to be running all those collected companies. It's got a brick, right? Like
yeah,
13 instant sorceries, one Elspeth.
The mana looks so bad.
It might brick. Yeah, the mana base looks.
How did he go 9-0?
So,
oh my god! Of course, I was ripping Flores the other week, and then look what happened. Yeah, like that deck's everywhere.
I played this deck on Cockatrice a couple of times just to kind of see what it was all about, so I could talk a little bit more informed about it. And my takeaway from it was, I agree with you, John. The mana base is awful. All those tapped lands. Like, you've got these 3-drops that you're playing on turn 4, and if you want a collected company, you'd probably be playing on turn 5, you know, with all the tapped lands. But it's cool. I mean, that said, there's some turns where you just go, like, okay, collected company end on turn, you get a bunch of dudes, beat in for, like, 9 damage out of nowhere on the next turn, you know, because I've got hasted Savage Knuckle Blades and hasted Mantis Riders and stuff. And I don't know
if this happens to you, Corey, but whenever I'm on Cockatrice, like, the weirdest crap happens. Like, I'll have this brew, either, like, something like this that I just found or something that I totally just brewed up out of the blue.
Yeah.
And I'll go on Cockatrice, and my first match will be against, like, a mirror.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the hell's going on? How did somebody randomly put this deck together?
Yeah, I feel like the 22 creatures isn't high enough. And then I think it'd be easy to bring in the Den Protectors and the Deathmist Raptors, because if you drop the instants and sorceries, you're probably going to drop Seeker of the Way as well.
Yeah.
That card also seems a little out of place.
It totally does.
I think just an accidental life gain card, like for against the Tarkir Red, they're like, attack you, you block, you Valor Stance it, or you block and cast Ogre Tusk Command and get like a three life swing on top of whatever you're doing with your secret.
He's got enough stuff to trigger it, but this deck's too greedy. I mean, this is the problem I have with lists like this. Yes, he went 9-0. I'm sure he ran well and this deck was somewhat strong, but like, I hate like for people to see this, especially younger Magic players or less experienced Magic players, and like latch on to decks like this, because Magic has a lot of math involved. Look at the lands, look at the amount of instants and sorceries and the card that you're building around. Like, there's stuff that's wrong here.
So the reason I brought this up, and I would agree with you, it's kind of wonky. I think that he's onto something though, and I think that maybe a teamer collected company could be a thing. I really like the interaction of, you know, flashing out the Savage Knuckle Blade and then, you know, beating with haste, or doing it at the end of their turn and then having all your mana untapped to activate its abilities. But instant speed creatures are really good versus control decks, you know, and instant speed creatures are really good versus decks that beat in with mid range creatures, like surprise blockers that are under costed are great. But to flash out like a Goblin Rabble Master, I don't know, Seeker of the Way, it just seems like we have a bunch of standard playable cards kind of jammed into a deck.
I'm surprised he didn't build off of, like, the five-color decks, like the Soul Flare Chromanicore decks, or, like, the ones that were, like, the five-color Rock Stars, where, like, they had black specifically to play Crackling Doom. Because if he's going to play this many instants and sorceries, you might as well leverage one of the best ones in the format right now, like the Super Edict. I mean, I'd rather play Crackling Doom over Stoke the Flames and, you know, Valorous Stance and stuff like that in this deck. I don't know. Maybe that just makes the mana even just that much more terrible.
But I think Valorous Stance has a good place in this deck. Just because, like, Indestructible is a very powerful ability to attach to one of your creatures. But Crackling Doom, I agree. I don't want one of these colors. I don't know which one it is, but one of these colors is bad.
Doom was one of the only cards that like kept that Rockstars deck competitive. One of the guys in our area, Fan Chen, who won the RPTQ recently in Chicago, he was playing five color for quite a while, and Crackling Doom was like the big linchpin, because this deck can often be so clunky and start out slow, and Crackling Doom kind of helps you catch up if they have a big threat. But I don't know. This deck's doing other things too, obviously, with collected company. I think it's more testament to that card gaining, like, insane popularity right now.
I think that card's going to be a major player in Standard in the coming weeks. It's starting to, like, get figured out.
Well, we talked about, like, you know, we were talking about the top cards in Standard. Collected Company is, I think it's here already, Corey, because, like, Green-White has been a big presence. At that PPTQ we were at on Saturday, it went XO in the Swiss, and it's got a really good Atarka matchup. It's very good against just most of the field in general. And then on Sunday, there was a deck there. It went XO. and then it did well at the GP with Craig Wesco. Like, it's all over the place now. I think for this weekend going forward, it might end up being like the one or two most popular decks. Because it doesn't seem to have a bad matchup. Like, it just plays really difficult to answer threats and Collected Company, which can just blow people out anytime you have four mana up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's, like, you got to be really careful with it, though. I mean, this deck does not look careful with it. I think all those instants and sorceries make it, like, weaker, every one you put in. But there's some green builds, like, mono green builds that have, like, all creatures, Collected Companies, and then, like, maybe two other spells or something in there. And they get lucky on occasion. Well, and just
Brad Nelson was playing one of those on camera, the mono green ones.
Yeah.
He was playing, I think the other spells that they were playing were like, I'm trying to remember the card. I think it's called Gather Courage. It's like a one green mana +2/+2, and you can convoke it. So it's like the super blowout early in the game. But that deck was interesting, but it's just like, it always made me think, why don't you just want to play the white cards there? Because like having Fleece Mainline or Bramaz or that sort of stuff seems so much better than like staying mono green and playing like the 3/2 for 2 green that does nothing.
Well, it gives you 2 pips. It's got Reverent Hunter in it too. And so when you collect the company into Reverent Hunter, you get a 6/6, you know.
That's true, yeah. That card is really good and kind of off the radar. Well, maybe it's not really good, I don't know.
I think it is. I mean, I think this is the reason to go mono green. I think it's a good reason because, you know, with Serac involved too, that's 2 pips as well, you know, for your green count. But these creatures add up to 8 for Formidable really quick, and you're going to be attacking for 9 with haste on like pretty consistently on turn 4.
Just as a side note, if we're on this link here too, we're looking at the undefeated list from Grand Prix Paris on day one, and the number 2 list, Zan Saeed, he I think was in the finals of this GP, or he was pretty close, at least top 4 finals. He's playing more like the traditional one here, the green white build with so he's only got 9 instants and sorceries. I feel like this is the better way to approach it here with 24 creatures. I would maybe have another creature or two, but he does have Mastery of the Unseen, which is also just a good card in general.
Uh-huh. See, 24 still seems light to me. With
right. I think 26 or 27 is what you try to aim for, I feel like, math-wise.
I think 27 is what a couple of the pros came up with the math.
I think you aim for the same number that you would play in a Domri Raid deck. Because Collect Company just feels like another Domri Raid to me. And so if you're willing to play, you know, 26, if you think you can get away with 26 while you're playing Domri Raid, then you could certainly get away with 26 where you're playing Collected Company. So
this deck doesn't have very many good Collected Company targets, to be honest with you. The Den Protectors come out, and their abilities don't get activated when they come into play face-up. Hidden Dragon Slayer, same deal. Warden of the First Tree is a 1-drop. Elvish Mystic. Deathmist Raptor is okay. But I don't know. I mean, I want more punch to that card. Like, I want to have all these great comes into play abilities, and I think there just aren't a lot of them available right now. But and I just want to jam my deck with, like, value creatures.
That is the interesting thing to this build, as opposed to, like, I think Wesco's playing more the, like, Bramaz build type, you know, value guys. Like, he doesn't have, like, he has only 2 Warden of the First Tree, but like you said, he's got a ton of Morph. So when you collected company in, like, a Deathmist Raptor, you have to play it face up, right? Or no?
Yes, yeah.
So that and Den Protector, that's like 8 cards plus Hidden Dragon Slayer. That's 10 creatures that you could get off Collected Company that like are super underwhelming when they're not morphed down first.
I mean, to be fair, Deathless Raptor's not underwhelming.
Yeah, he's fine. I guess on his own, but
that doesn't matter. But the Den Protector is the one that you want flipped down, and the Hidden Dragon Slayer is too. Because Den Protector, or the Deathless Raptor, I mean, just has to be in your yard for it to like get its value. Isn't it? Oh, no. Permanent control is turned. Yeah, so if it's in your graveyard, right. Okay, I don't know. But anyways, I guess the point of this was that this deck is interesting. play it at your own risk. Take it to FNM or something. Have fun with your surprise Hornet Nest blockers. I think that's the reason to play this deck.
This is definitely the FNM hero deck, for sure.
Yeah.
And I'm calling that out now so that next week when it's everywhere, I'll be wrong again.
All right, so I think that brings us to the end of the cast. This was kind of a long one tonight, so thanks for listening through to the end here.
Non-magic things, are we doing that again this week?
Yeah, let's do that real quick. Daryl, you want to start?
So I have 2. One, I have a how many ever keys are on a keyboard jigsaw puzzle that I've been working on for the past 10 minutes. I spilled a glass of orange juice over my Razer Naga keyboard, or my Razer Black Widow keyboard, so I feel like a freaking idiot. So if you guys want to listen to me put my keyboard back together, you can laugh and yell I'm doing it. Two, I got a job in Baltimore, Maryland, so I get to do the fun moving thing again, which is delightfully awful. But I probably won't be on the cast the next couple of weeks preparing to get out of Madison, unfortunately. So that's all my fun non-magic things. You'll be but I got a sweet job, so I can't complain.
That's a plus. That's a pro.
Nice. That's all I got for non-magic.
I will be I'll be driving to Atlanta on Wednesday, so I've got a big trip going for a buddy's wedding for that, so that'll be interesting.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm a blast. Like, so I was excited to try, like, some southern food or at least go to, like, a Waffle House. And the rehearsal dinner for this thing is actually at some place called, like, Gladys May's Waffle House or something like that. Like, Gladys May's Waffles and Fried Chicken or something.
Chicken and Waffles. Yeah.
I'm like, this sounds great, man. All right.
Dude, that place is awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited. It sounds pretty dope. And it'll be a cool road trip to see. But we got to figure out which way we're going. I don't know if any of you guys have been down south, but I'm still trying to figure out which routes to take there and back. We want to mix it up a little bit.
I've been down south. The answer is it doesn't matter. It's all terrifyingly bad.
Well, like, we want to hit big cities. Like, you know, I was thinking, like, Memphis on the way and then, like, Asheville on the way back or something, you know, music
scenes. Those are definitely both awesome to go to. Kansas City, if you can get it.
That's way the other direction. But
yeah,
Kansas City's awesome. I'm a Chiefs fan also, so.
Oh, okay.
A little biased, but yeah.
Okay. Sorry for you, John.
I know. It's hard some years. We've got a little bit of a team, I guess, right now. But
don't feel bad, dude. I'm a Jaguars fan. It's hard every year.
Mm-hmm. How did that start?
Yeah, no kidding.
We'll discuss afterwards.
All right. Save that for next
week. Never mind.
Or the future weeks when you return.
So, Corey, you?
So I got some store credit for that PPTQ, and I actually bought a board game with it. So we played a little bit of this game called Castles of the Mad King Ludwig, which is based on some German history where there was a king that just kind of went crazy and was just like building rooms onto his castle and making like just a really expansive like maze like estate. And so in this game, you kind of like, it's basically like drafting rooms of the castle, which are pretty cool. And so you have things like a bowling alley room, and you can't have that near to like a sleeping room, you know, because you get minus points when you have it near to a room that needs to be quiet or something along those lines, and different objectives and stuff. So everyone's kind of sitting around the table, like buying out these rooms and putting them in their castle, very much like a draft,
Monopoly and The Sims combined or something like that.
Yeah, well, it's pretty badass. I'd recommend the game. I've only played it once or twice so far, so I'm looking forward to doing that more, but that was my.
There's been a big board game movement in Madison recently. We got a bunch of guys who are like going hardcore into board games. So you have to get down here and play with us one of these times.
Oh yeah, all right.
Yeah, a lot of good fun ones recently too.
Yeah, like what?
Camel Cup has been one that we've been playing a lot of. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Is it Camel Cup or Camel Up?
The Camel Cup.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Camel Cup, really? Yeah, basically it's just betting on camel races.
Okay.
Like,
I have to play this now.
To make a long story short, and it is incredibly fun.
Sweet.
So, Ryan, what about you, man?
Non-magic things. So, recently I bought a house, and one thing I remember I loved doing when I was a kid was mowing the lawn, and I didn't really realize it recently until recently that mowing the lawn sucks.
Well, so, how much grass do you have at the space station?
Besides money, that whole responsibility thing's like the number one thing keeping me from a house.
Yeah.
So, even though it'd be sweet to have one.
Yeah, the responsibility of the upkeep of stuff like that. You don't think about that until you have to do it. So.
Hey, but now you get to host the grill outs, right? For magic cards and board games.
Yes.
I'm so sad that I don't get to be here for these anymore.
We'll Skype you in, Daryl.
Yeah.
You can smell the brat through the Skype.
No, I can't.
Ryan's recommendation of Camel Cup is Board Game Geek certified. It got an average rating of 7, which is a good rating. I always want to check them up on this site because board games are like $50. You don't want to buy something without making sure a guy at least is 6.
These guys only roll with the serious board games out of that. There seems to be a number of board games though that are like that, where like super high ratings online. Like it seems like these days you don't have to go out and play something basic. You really can get something that you know is going to be like somewhat decent.
Mm-hmm. I was looking on YouTube, get a review on YouTube. Yeah, Puerto Rico is supposed to be like, the best game.
If you guys want a game that I would definitely recommend, it's very good for Magic players because the rules are simple to pick up. It's very good for non-Magic players because the rules are nerdy and entertaining. Is Smash Up.
Oh yeah, I played that.
Smash Up is very good.
Cool.
I have not played many of these games, so I clearly need to get involved with you guys on these game nights and get
it. Step up your board game game, bro.
I know. Yeah. It's been invading the Magic store, man. Like we'll have like some Magic going and then there'll be like two or three board game games going and I need to step over to the other side of the line, I think.
You do.
All right, well, I think we got to wrap it up. We're at like an hour and a half now, and I've got to edit this beast.
Sweet, take us out, man.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan, for visiting today.
Yeah, anytime. Hopefully, I can actually, next time I'm on here, I'll be back on planet Earth and off the space station. So.
Oh, good, yeah. But you won't be able to walk or anything, so.
Yeah.
We'll just have to have someone bring that mic over and like put it real close to your face. Until you get used to gravity again.
We got to do like one cast I heard where they were like sitting out on the porch having lemonade, just chilling. That's what I got to do.
All right. Well, we are Card Knock Live. For bad beats or $1. Brandon's not on to try to solicit your donations for bad beat stories. But John, I do believe you owe him $1 after last week.
I didn't even put in a bad beat. I heard this lies as I'm listening to the cast. I'm like, what the hell is that?
Yeah, so he'll correct that next time he's on. But you can always I don't know how you can get his PayPal. I never actually put it in the show notes, even though I say I do every time. But just send us an email for any like even questions that are not related to Bad Beat Stories, cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com. Also we are cardknocklifepodcast. Oh, I can't talk today. Cardknocklifepodcast.com.
And card_knock_life.
Something or other.
At Twitter.
Something. Dark side.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Look for the little car with the magic car bricks.
Yeah. All right. Good night.
Stupid sidebar. Putting together a jigsaw puzzle that is a keyboard sucks. It's the literal worst.
Can you remember where all the keys are supposed to go?
Corey, have we stopped?
No, I'm still recording because Daryl's talking.
Oh.
He's just recording the odyssey of me trying to put my keyboard deck together.
I want
to
include the wrap up of Daryl's odyssey.
Keyboard beats over here.
Dude, the keyboard odyssey is going to go on for a while. I still have a huge pile of keys.
All right. Good night for real.
Later, guys.